Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation I'm hoping helps your business grow. So you ever go to the store and you try to buy something and you get offered yet another rewards thing? Fill out this form, do this card, put this little key fob on your keychain. Next thing you know, you look like the janitor at your elementary school, except for you're loaded up with reward cards. There's a way to fix that. We're going to get into that today during today's episode of Startup Hustle, which is brought to you and powered by Fullscale.io. Hiring software developers is difficult, and Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably, and has the platform to help you manage that team. Visit Fullscale.io to learn more. With me today, I've got Toby Rush, and Toby is the CEO and co-founder of Redeem. You can learn more about Redeem. You can just scroll down to that link in the show notes and click it, which I recommend so you can learn more about what Toby and his business does while we're talking, or you can just type in redeem.xyz. Toby has been on the show with us before, and I'm proud to announce that Redeem is on Startup Hustle's 2023 list of top Kansas City startups. That's my hometown, that's Toby's hometown, and that will make me just want to say, Toby, welcome back.
Matt, happy to be here. Thanks for having me. Excited to hang out today.
It's been a little bit, you know, and I think you know this because I think I told you at one point, but we recorded an episode about startup success, or It was a long time ago, but that was the most popular episode on Startup Hustle for like a year and a half or something.
That was a lot of fun. I enjoy just sitting back and letting the words fly.
That was a virtual recording during the pandemic. That was shortly after we had to figure out how to do it on the internet.
God, how many have you done now, by the way?
We had our 1,000th episode on December 7th. Ooh. Wow.
Awesome. Right? Congratulations. That's awesome.
Yeah. It was not planned. We had our 5th birthday, our 4 millionth download, and our 1,000th episode all occurred in the same week.
Nice.
You could probably try to plan that, and I don't think we could have, but it's just the way it happened. So, and thanks for being a part of that. That was, it's always fun to chat and talk with you. You've got a new thing.
Got a new thing. I'm a glutton for punishment. Yeah. I'm at it again.
But with that, let's take just a minute and talk about some of the other things, because you have an interesting backstory and I'd like to learn. I think everyone would like to learn more about it. I'm already familiar with it.
Sure. No, you know, my background, I'd say I just love building stuff. I love building products. I love building teams. I love building companies. And my spare time, which isn't a whole lot of spare time these days, I love building woodworking and wood projects and epoxy. And I just love the kind of the creation of the artistic side of what's possible, but then the engineering side of how do you fit it all together, right? So early days, grew up as a farm kid in Northeast Kansas, really didn't know what the word entrepreneurship was, but always had my own little side hustle. I was always finding a way to make money. Allowance wasn't a word that my family really understood. So if you're gonna have any money, you better go figure out how to make it yourself. Captain of the football or basketball team, you know, math and science was always easy for me. So getting to K-State, I'd came from a very, very small school, But coming to K-State, my eyes were just open to like so many people and so many ideas and things that you could do that really just was flourished and had a blast at K-State. Ended up, still didn't think entrepreneurship was a thing at the time. So went to Accenture, started working there, enjoyed that, went to a smaller consulting company. Wanted to see what a pure software company would look like. So the idea of putting kind of your blood, sweat, and tears into something and then being able to reap the rewards of that, right? And consulting, you, even if you do a great job, well, you move on to the next project, right? So if you do a phenomenal job, you're not getting the benefit of all of that hard work. And so say, hey, I want to be able to, you know, experience what it's like to put in really good work and then be able to beneficiary of that. And so joined a startup, took kind of a product management role about 9 months after I got there. They fired the VP of engineering and said, Toby, will you run product and engineering and QA until we find a new engineering? And I'm like, sure, why not? And I had no idea what I was doing. Jumped in, kind of fly by the seat of your pants, and they never found anyone else, right? So when the problem goes away, you're like, oh, well, that guy's solving it now. So at a ripe age of 26 or 27 years old, I was managing 25, 30 people. I just loved it. And that's really what got bit by the startup bug and this entrepreneurship thing. Came back to Kansas City, really to be close to some friends and family and kind of long-term where my wife and I wanted to be. First company is called Rush Tracking Systems. We put technology on forklifts. Kind of the aha there was humans are great at driving. They're terrible about data collection. So think forklifts and forklift drivers and warehouses. And they have to pick up a pallet, scan the pallet, scan the bay, scan the pallet, scan the door. Technology is really good at data collection. It's really hard to automate dynamic, unconstrained environments like driving. So we put a camera on top of a forklift and 2D barcodes in the ceiling. It's like our own indoor GPS system. We put a camera and an RFID reader on the front of the truck, and we're able to do all of the pickup and put downs of all the inventory. So we let drivers drive, which they're really good at, and we let technology, data collection, which it's really good at, and it just worked. Sold that to a private equity. We raised a little bit of money, some angels and some strategics. This is way back, man, that was 03 to 09. So early days in the Kansas City ecosystem. With the private equity, they wanted us to do a roll-up. So we bought a couple of other companies kind of in that space. We got some great M&A experience kind of working with the private equity. Rolled off of that. Love computer vision. I'm still fascinated by computer vision. Like everybody right now is super into ChatGPT and all the cool things, and that's all cool. I think computer vision, we're still scratching the surface. Like because we have so many cameras, when computers can understand the world and interpret it, from videos and pictures, like we're going to see a massive step change, and we're getting there. But oftentimes in machine learning and AI, it feels like an exponential curve. So you look backwards and it's a flat line. You look forwards and it's a straight wall, right? I think that's the curve that we're on when it comes to computer vision as well.
Well, we should stop for just a second and explain that. Computer vision is an open source platform that does literally give computers a neural network of vision.
Yeah.
Because what Toby's talking about is that two-dimensional view of things is really how computers see things. So in order to have depth, shading, all of that, and it's remarkably complex. It's been around for a long time, and it is still kind of scratching the surface. We were talking about a Tesla driving you around. There are elements of computer vision and that
tons
and a
of
lot
it.
Of other things. So, sorry, I don't like too many things to go undefined. So sure. Please proceed.
No, that's great. Well, even to double click into computer vision a little bit, like one of the things for me is it's really fascinating. The human brain, you think about how much our eyes see, like we see everything. Our brain lets very little actually through to our brain because the rest of it just feels like noise. It is noise, right? But if it's a computer, the computer can see everything, record everything in perfect fidelity, but it can't understand it. As computers can begin to understand the things that our camera sees, like we're in for a world of innovation and really, really some cool things. But anyway, so love computer vision, fascinated by both technologies and what it can unlock. Came across a professor at UMKC here in town, looking, and he was using computer vision to look at the blood vessels and the whites of your eyes and use that as a biometric. I'm like, that's kind of creepy, kind of cool. And said, hey, that's interesting. And they thought, the university thought, immigration, airports, and the military was where we should go use the technology. I'm like, why don't we go do passwords on smartphones? Like, that seems like a bigger use case, a bigger unlock. But this was 2011. There were no biometrics on smartphones, not a single one. Like the biggest pushback I got is like, why would anyone do biometrics on smartphones? And if it's such a good idea, why isn't Apple and Google doing it? Like, I don't know, but it just feels so obvious. It has to be where things go. So we're fortunate we launched iVerify in 2012, kind of Q1 of 2012. Apple came out with Touch ID in 2013. K came out with Apple Pay in 2014, and just kind of the doors flew open. So we had Wells Fargo and Citigroup and RSA computing as a customers. We had 60 banks up and running in production, no small feat. We ended up, Samsung was an investor. We were working with LG and a whole bunch of other kind of Chinese manufacturing firms. And we started calling on Alipay over in China. They loved it. Eventually, Alibaba and Ant Group ended up acquiring us, which was an awesome, fascinating, fun ride. So I had engineering teams in Beijing, Singapore, San Francisco, Kansas City, by far the hardest leadership job I've ever had, managing that many people, that many cultures, that many time zones, but ran biometrics and identity for a couple of years for them. So I had, you know, a major biometrics platform in China, in India, Indonesia, Philippines, Singapore, Thailand, lived on a plane for a while. They asked me to join their investments team, right? So I could do corporate venture capital work. And it's funny, Jack Ma's calling card can open any door you can possibly imagine.
I would imagine, yeah.
So it was fun. So it was blockchain. So kind of my 90% of my focus is go understand kind of core, kind of fundamental use cases of blockchain and how it could impact the larger Alibaba ecosystem. So spent some good time in San Francisco and Israel, kind of looking at that. Left Alibaba kind of towards the end of 2019. Did a couple projects with some private equities about a year ago, came back and looked again at blockchain, Web3. And I'm like, whoa, there's a lot more here than there used to be. There's a lot more people building, a lot of nonsense. But that's kind of really where we tripped over the idea of Redeem.
So a couple things to unpack there. I like to compare years to the iPhone model that we were at because right. It gives you some perspective. So in 2011, that was an iPhone 4.
Yes.
It wasn't until 2013 that the iPhone 5 came out, because then it would take a couple years sometimes. But you know, you look back at some of that, and I'll even compare our developers at Fullscale. I'm like, this guy's got 10 years of experience. To give you a little bit of perspective, he was building iOS apps when it was iPhone 5.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, wow. You know, but what the only security metric on any phone was then was just a little 4-digit passkey, right?
Yep. 4-digit and your pass. Yeah. On to get into the phone, if you used it at all.
Right.
But then when you got in, there was no way to log into any of the apps other than passwords.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're typing in every single time because nobody trusted the mobile device.
Right.
It's a terrible user experience.
If you think about it now, I would be, I said before we hit record how lost I was when I switched from one phone to the next. I was like, I realized how bad my password management was and had to like take like half a day pretty much to fix it. Cause I knew, you know how it goes, you know, you're like, I could just type it in or I could actually fix the problem. When you have a gunshot wound, you should just wrap it with gauze, right?
Of course. Yeah.
That's maybe startup founder mentality. Okay. So that's an amazing story. I remember when iVerify, that was, you know, it was a big acquisition. That was big news. That was a while ago, huh?
It was amazing how long, 2016.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, staggering.
Time flies.
Time flies.
You talk about the amount of innovation and, you know, for those of you listening, you know, I really encourage Toby to dive into the backstory because think about the things that you just heard there. You have 2011. How come Google and Apple aren't doing it? I don't know. Seems like a good idea though, but that's what good innovators, inventors, and startup founders do is you see something and you realize, man, this is going to be a solution someone needs later, but these solutions don't happen overnight. You know, right. Warren Buffett's pretty well known for saying 9 women don't make a baby in a month. And,
yep.
And in that case, and I want to add on to one thing you had talked before about that acquisition at some point you realized that what iVerify did wasn't necessarily a platform, but maybe more of a complementary feature that would make sense. So can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah.
I do want to get into Redeem, but I think that you have so many valuable lessons about that. Because when you've told me that in the past, that was very insightful to understand where your business was at and maybe like there's limitations here, but it's still kind of unlimited.
No, it was. I mean, so early on, like even whether I was talking to customers or fundraising, I'd always kind of get this pushback for like, where's the end game? Like, where does this thing end up going? And if I were really honest with myself, I think it's basically eyes and fingers. Like, what are the two things you do with your phone all day long? You touch and look at your phone. And I still believe eventually we will have both fingerprinting under glass and kind of eye and face-based biometrics on phone. We only did the eye. Right? We didn't do finger. And so kind of this idea of really, it's about identity. It's not about this feature, this specific thing. And so as I really challenged myself realizing, And I actually have a piece of the platform. I don't have a platform. And platforms are very valuable, right? Platforms solve problems in a little bit more holistic way. And so when the Alibaba opportunity came up, actually what I pitched them was, hey, you have an amazing opportunity to create an identity platform and use the onboarding experience for your wallet. So remember at the time, Ant Group, which is part of Alibaba, were focusing on the unbanked and underbanked in China, India, Indonesia, which by the way, those three countries are half the world's population. And they're just coming into this digital world. And as a wallet was one of the first kind of secure applications they would need to get, you had to do a lot of what's called KYC and a lot of kind of validation of that user, including biometrics. I'm like, use that onboarding experience, create an identity platform that would solve their all of their password and identity needs the rest of their lives, whether it was eye or face or voice or behavior, all these different things, it didn't matter. And it's one of the few things you can say, everyone in the world will eventually need a digital identity. And once you need a digital identity, a username and password, you'll need it the rest of your life. That's pretty crazy. Yeah. Very few things you could say that about. And I remember the CEO of Ant, we were having this conversation. He's like, I like it, but you have to go run it. Great. I love it. What's my goal? 2 billion users. two billion.
Let's start with a modest number here.
Sure, let's give it a shot. What was cool about Alibaba, like there were almost no constraints. They had plenty of people, plenty of money, but they also had a ton of ideas. Like one of the things, actually, one of the interesting ahas I had when I was working there, again, talking with some of the executives, like senior executives, Alibaba and Ant, is like, we have no constraints on money or people. We have constraints on people we can trust to use money and people wisely.
That's a pretty wise outlook. Right? Now, with that, everything you just described has DNA in what you're building at Redeem.
It does. So I'd say a lot of the pieces I think about, let me describe a little bit of.
Let's talk about the problem at first, because at the beginning I mentioned like, hey, I go to buy something. It's another rewards program. And let's be honest, that's annoying.
True.
Yeah. Because I mean, my wife for years had literally had a key fob.
all the little things
on it. And I did actually ask her after we talked several months ago, mm-hmm. when you were still in stealth mode, I was like, what did you ever do with any of those? Did you ever cash any of those in or do anything? She's like, no, I just threw the whole key ring out.
Yeah. And really, you almost have to take a step further back, because really the rewards are just kind of an example of the pain point that we have here of a new world that we are entering, and one that's purely digital. Right. And so when we started 15, 20 years ago, about how do we engage, live, work in kind of this digital world, it was a wild, wild west. You didn't know who to trust, how to trust it. So what we ended up doing is we went to these really big tech companies. Really, these tech companies emerged to solve the problem of, Apple and Facebook and Google in particular, said, hey, we're going to have a walled garden. And inside our walled garden, you're going to be able to trust anything that we say. So, for example, if I said, Matt, you own ABC123, the number. And because you own ABC123, here are all these other benefits that you've got. It'll unlock levels. You might get access to different areas of the platform. You might have certain, all sorts of other benefits because you own ABC123. Well, if you go down in the open, you go outside of Apple's wall, how do you know who owns ABC123? It's infinitely copyable. Anybody can copy and paste ABC123 as many times as you want. And so the only way that we could really trust and operate and really live is inside, for the most part, other people's walled gardens. Well, now we have this new technology. It's called blockchain, Web3. And this idea of I can own purely digital things. I can use purely digital things in a way that continues to have that level of trust, but I no longer have the limitations of the walled garden. So how do I live and operate in what we call open ecosystems? That aren't dictated by big tech or big government, right? So I'm fascinated by bottoms-up solutions, ideas, operating, and really blockchain and Web3. I think fundamentally, that's what I get excited about, of this ability to say, how do we own something purely digital, use it in a purely digital world, but in a way that I get to own my own things, and I'm not dictated by Apple and Google and Facebook's and other big tech companies' rules, because I don't have to live inside their four walls.
And that, well, the buzzword with Web3, and we were talking about this before the show, because sometimes that gets intermingled with crypto. They're very different, but use the same underlying technology.
Right.
But a lot of people are completely fascinated with the decentralized nature of that, mm-hmm. which is essentially what you're discussing. We didn't mention government, or maybe you did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Government's the big one. And then, for a lot of people, the way that their perception is some of these other companies, well, Apple is bigger than governments. they have a higher GDP of some sorts than a lot of countries. Mm-hmm. and have a lot of sway, a lot of pull. And then obviously, so you look at, well, you look at marketplaces and, you know, well, the term oligopoly is when two companies own 97% or more. The easiest example for most people to wrap their arms around is razor blades.
Yeah.
Gillette and Schick.
They own them all.
You get past that and there's like basically nothing. And what about Dollar Shave Club? They got bought by one of those two.
Right.
And but it has a big influence on a lot of our things. So you talk about phone devices, computers. We're both sitting here looking at our Apple laptops and stuff like that. And you know, it's great products and it's great things, but at the same time, we're stuck in there. Well, Apple's in a lot of trouble right now. Well, maybe hot water about their app store practices and some of that. Right. And it's
their
like,
walled garden.
Well, right. And so what are you going to do?
Right. So, well, I think that's where
you're like, what are you going to do? Not put your app in the Apple App Store? Because that's more than half of American phones.
Yep.
It would have a lesser impact, like in the Philippines where I travel a lot. Apple's not as common. It's all just a lot more expensive, but there's a lot of stuff in there. Now, with the solution that Redeem gives, you talked about the things that never change. Obviously, our fingerprint, or maybe our eyes, but our phone number.
It is. So one of the ahas that we had early on as I was thinking about Redeem was like, how do you make this easier? Like, it is wicked complicated. For anybody who's played in the Web3 space, you have these really long hexadecimal numbers that are called wallet addresses. And you know, people are trying to come up with a whole brand new naming systems, you know, your ENS or, you know, Handshake or Unstoppable Domains, or all these, you know, trying to literally recreate this entire directory system. Like, wait a second.
There's no human that can remember their actual wallet ID. There's probably like 12. Those are the same people that can like do pi out to like the 100th place.
Tough to build a business on those 12 people.
Yes.
Right. And so this idea, we already have this global numbering system that we've all opted into, right? We have our phone numbers. We remember our phone number off the top of our head. Zero effort. No matter how late or how early in the day, I can recite my phone number with zero effort. Every one of my friends has my phone number. And I have theirs. It's in my phone. We already have an app local that we use to communicate. We text back and forth, right? That is the primary, or WhatsApp or text, or kind of whatever the messaging app is. Carriers have spent billions of dollars securing the network that these global identifiers run on. And this global identifier isn't just a number. It's a communication path.
Well, it's in your pocket all the time, too. My laptop is in my pocket all the time.
So really cool things like you pull your device out right now. There is one device in the entire world that can make a mobile data connection with that phone. And carriers pretty much guarantee that, right? So like, wait, we've got this really incredible numbering system that we can use in person. I can give someone my number. I can connect digitally if I have my phone. I'm literally kind of one of the things we say in it's terrible. It's kind of the crypto bros, you know, if your wallet, your keys. So you don't own your wallet unless you have your keys. And we're kind of flipping that a little bit. It's like, hey, if you have your phone, you have your keys and your wallet. Because there's no other phone in the world that can have your number active on it right now. And so how do we simplify and really kind of unlock the Web3 world simply using your phone number? That was kind of one of the ahas, right? And so then kind of building off
that's necessary though, because when we first talked about this, I think it was not too, well, it was a few months after the Super Bowl and Coinbase had the really famous QR code bouncing out, which I thought was brilliant marketing because in some ways they stuck their middle finger up because they're like, if you don't even know what this is, you're not going to be our client. You're not going to buy crypto. But I think the things that need to occur to bring Web3 and blockchain in general to the masses are a level of simplicity. It isn't a wallet ID with 19 keyword phrases. The fox ran over the blue moon and ran back around the forest again. And, you know, it's like, it's just confusing. And what does it do with it? I actually wish crypto didn't have the word currency attached to it.
Right.
Because it's very confusing because it's not almost all of it is not intended to be actual currency.
It is. Let's jump into some of those use cases. I think people get really kind of sidelined and sidetracked with cryptocurrency and think about, what is it, Bitcoin or is it ETH or is it all these different currencies? And is that a scam? And by the way, yes, a lot of them are scams.
And that's really coming out now. It's really, really coming. Yeah.
And so when we started Redeem, like, we don't have a token. We don't have our own cryptocurrency. We're just using the core technology to unlock some new use cases. So let's go to one that people can really grasp onto. And it's actually ticketing, right? So if I want to go to a Chiefs game, and I just use a music concert. It's even better. So I'm gonna go to Taylor Swift concert. Taylor Swift's coming to town. I want to go to her concert. And I bought a ticket, right? That ticket can be issued as an NFT, right? So it's just a number, right? It doesn't really matter. Everyone can know what the number is. Say I bought it, but you know what? Matt's a great friend. I'm actually gonna send it to Matt. And I can literally text Matt kind of out of my wallet and send it to Matt. And now when he clicks on that link, he's on his phone. I can transfer that ticket. So now Matt has this ticket that is owned by him. So now it's a 2 or 3 days before the event. Other brands want to say, hey, we want to actually give Matt some, hey, we see you going to the Taylor Swift concert. You must like, here's $20 off my website, or here's $15 to come here. By the way,
her latest song.
The early release. So you can only listen to her latest release. It's not on radio yet. It's not on Spotify. But if you have this NFT, you can unlock the song, right? They even give you a parking pass. So now you have a parking pass in your wallet. And as you're driving up to the gate, you scan the QR code. When you scan that QR code at the gate, it's going to launch the browser on your phone, which knows the number, which has the wallet, which has the NFT ticket. So literally you scan the QR code and you've got this super crazy, it's called token gated access control. So because I have a token, I can access control. But now I go into the stadium, same thing, I get into the stadium, but now I want to be able to get into a certain VIP room. And I can have my ticket, but I can have 2+1s. Like again, I can text you this token that can give you access to this area within the inside the venue, right? Which is awesome. But now I leave the venue and say a bar is kind of partnered and sponsored the event and say, hey, if you come to our bar and bring at least 3 people, we'll give you, everybody gets a free beer, right? And so you can do all this post-event engagement where people can say, hey, thanks for coming. You know, Taylor Swift now has a way to engage with you that isn't just through Ticketmaster. Right, so this is really amazing. Again, Ticketmaster is another four wall. Right, if you want to do tickets in this country, you get Ticketmaster.
Literally one of the most hated brands on the planet. By the way, I was a ticket broker for a while, so yeah, I'm familiar with it.
But they've got four walls.
Which, by the way, I went through the when I was a ticket broker. I went through the transition from hard tickets, as we would call them, which is actual ticket stub, to just PDFs. Yep. And man, you want to talk about pulling teeth? Like people would call us just so pissed off. That we had emailed them, basically transfer them digitally a ticket. They're like, I want the ticket stub.
Right.
And that's a weird thing that the music industry had to basically put their foot down. They're like, hey, this isn't the right way to do it. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't how we're going to do it. And the problem is what you're talking about, and that might sound like a lot to someone listening, but you know, when, you know, Full Scale had tickets at the local arena, and mm-hmm. we would do stuff. And if I wanted to, so we had a suite there. And if we wanted to let my wife be able to go down to the main concourse mm-hmm. and then just even come back up, because you had to have a barcode to get in, I literally have to go through an arduous transfer process.
Right.
And then also do not try to engage in that while the venue's full, because the entire cell network is jammed up.
Right.
Yep. So I'm sitting there like, okay, I'm just, if we forgot to do that ahead of time, I'm like, take a picture of the ticket
right
on your phone, and let's hope that the barcode works when you do that.
Right.
And then Ticketmaster now has a thing where like every 60 seconds that barcode's changing. It's a security method. So you're not going to do that, because they're actually trying to prevent what we were doing. And it's just like, next thing you know, I'm spending noticeable time rather than attending the event that I came to watch. Yeah. Cause I'm also had 12 guests there that are knocking on the door or texting me. They're going, I'm in the stairwell.
Yeah. Help me out. How do I get in?
Yeah. So, yeah.
So again, when you have to live inside Ticketmaster's four walls, is their walled garden. Their
rules. Anybody's four walls.
Right. So it was Apple or Ticketmaster. And so the ability to get outside these four walls, but yet still have security that you can trust. You got phone, you got access. Right. So we love that. So now you can also extend that to rewards and loyalty. So if a brand is wanting to engage with you today, Apple, Google, Facebook in particular are making it harder and harder to advertise or to connect with consumers. The cookies are all changing, which are great in many, many ways, but it's making it very, very difficult for these brands to not connect with their users. And so they're seeing kind of Web3 as a way to have a direct one-to-one connection. Right. So if I can give you an NFT that's a badge, it's a membership. We call the rewards and loyalty piece specifically dots. Like we're specifically not calling them NFTs, because people get, wait, is that like a picture of a bored ape? Is that a bored monkey? Is that one of those Bitcoin things? Like, can I buy that? Like, no, these are next generation coupons and promo codes. We just call them dots. You grab a dot, you pick up a dot. When brands want to engage with you, it's you can scan a QR code and you can grab the dot. So if I'm at an event, I'm at a stadium, I'm at a pop-up, I can scan that QR code, immediately goes into my wallet. I can now use my phone number instead of the promo code on the e-commerce website. Or I can give my phone number to the clerk at the point of sale and it can pull all those through. This phone number is this amazing link, and we've already got it. We already know it. So we're just like, okay, how do we kind of use kind of the phone number to unlock the power of Web3 for the masses? That's what I'm really excited about for Edine.
So it's a daunting task, though, because you're talking about a rollout that's got to
global
go a lot of places. And then, you know, there's always the resistance to change. Mm-hmm. Change isn't easy for people. True. And you got to overcome. Okay, so you got to build trust factors. Mm-hmm. And people didn't trust the fingerprint ID. They didn't trust the face ID.
Yep.
Are you in a global database of facial recognition because of that? Maybe, but you were probably in it anyway. Did you go get a driver's license photo?
Right.
Because yep. They have your face. It's not like it's not on record. Like
sure.
In second grade, you did a fingerprint to help you if you were an abducted child. They got that. It's out there, man. Like, quit fighting it, people. It's really not there. There's nothing invasive that isn't already out there.
Well, the thing I like about the approach we're taking with Redeem is you already have your phone number. We're not asking you to get a new identifier. You already text message all the time. We're not asking you for new behaviors. You know what a QR code is. Like, when you just get like, it's really funny. I pressure touched this to my mom. Like, they're always like, hey, can a grandma use it? And so this is, you know, early days. Like, hey, mom. She's 75, has an iPhone, uses it, but that's about it. I was like, mom, do you know any 10 digit numbers? And she's like, no. Like, why would I know any 10 digit numbers? Like, what do you know your phone number? She's like, of course I know my phone number, Toby. Like, do you know any others? She's like, well, no, but my phone has them all. I don't need to memorize everyone else's phone numbers. Like, and then I pulled up a QR code. It's like, hey, mom, when you see this, what do you do? Like, well, I take my camera out and I point it at it and something pops up and I click on it. Like, so with zero instruction, I didn't have to teach my mom anything. She knew what to do. So leverage those existing behaviors, but now make the link into Web3, which again is this cool unlock of what happens when you can experiment and be creative and have this amazing kind of creative potential outside the walled gardens of big tech. I'm just, like, in the next 10 years, I think we're going to see an explosion of innovation when we're not hemmed in by what the big tech and big government says we can or can't do. We can have 1,000 ideas and 1,000 projects. But for me, it's just my phone number. All I have to do is understand my phone number and text messaging and I'm good to go.
Yeah, the awareness thing is real though. And you mentioned, so first off, in 2022, the QR code might have been one of the comeback players of the year.
Oh, for sure.
So with that, yep. It was 5 years ago. We have a client that has a large sneaker resale operation in Vegas. Mm-hmm. Worked with them for years, long before we even had Full Scale. They were client zero at Full Scale because they kind of came with me with that. But you know, a problem they had was in a place that's ultimately like sneaker resale. These are still brand new shoes. It's not like you use shoes. These are like people wait in line for Jordans and right. Stuff like that. And so you have all these shoes at the store. And the problem was you might end up with Air Jordan, whatever, size 9. And there's 6 different pairs of those in the size 9 represented by 6 different sellers that all want a different price for them. Mm-hmm. And we're like, how do we build a dynamic marketplace? Because this huge store, which is growing inventory, and you couldn't put a static price tag on those things because you'd have to change it. And you also don't want a bad consumer experience. So they have to go like, did they get the one that's $100 more or the wrong one? You know, so sure. So we were like, this is when QR codes were first recognized by a phone's camera. But no one seemed to know that. So we helped them roll out this QR code price system that would just open their app, essentially show you what sizes were available, what the lowest price was. It was a good thing, but we rolled this out and oh my God. And then the next problem was that everybody at the store spent significant time trying to help everybody
teach them how to figure
it. Yeah. So we had to put signs up everywhere that like right. all over, they were like, did you, your phone, point your phone's camera at yeah. this. And There was definitely, and that's what I'm saying is that anytime something new or innovative comes out, there's oftentimes this adjustment period mm-hmm. that goes through it. I think the phone number thing's really palatable.
Yeah. Well, again, it's so already so familiar and so comfortable, like even our onboarding experience, right? So the very first time we want to onboard you, you can either kind of scan a QR code or click on a link. So say I want to pick up this $20 off, or say I'm at a Casey Current game, kind of our women's soccer team. So they have a coffee brand sponsors them and hey, get a free cup of coffee. If you scan this QR code at the event, right? So you scan this QR code and what our system does is it pops up a text message on your phone pre-filled. So it's basically the 2 is filled out. And then the message on the bottom is filled out saying, I want to claim, you know, this unique code. They hit send. That's all they do. That is the entire onboarding process. There's no app to download. There's no form to fill out. If you can scan a QR code and hit send, you've onboarded and now you got a free cup of coffee. Now you go to the coffee cafe. and say, here's my phone number, which you typically do anyways, as you're checking out. It's like, oh, you have a free cup of coffee. Congratulations. Thanks for attending the KC Current game. Right? The simplicity of two-click onboarding into Web3. And if we, all those who've been in the Web3 world, the idea of onboarding into, you know, full-blown Web3 with two clicks, and then your phone number is this beautiful link that can go in real life. It can go e-commerce, Shopify sites. It can go to decentralized, traditional Web3 world, even the metaverse. So now say, again, I went to a KC Current game, and so I have this ticket, and it's in my phone-based wallet. Now I want to go to kind of a metaverse. And metaverse, don't think metaverse is kind of crazy, you know, meta, Facebook meta world, but it's Roblox, it's Minecraft, it's Fortnite. That's where all these brands are trying to go. And so you went to a KC Current game, and now you go into Roblox, and a new realm opens up because your wallet, your phone number that you connected is now has this KC Current. So now you can go to the KC Current playground, or you can go into this cool area. And so it's kind of token gating even in the metaverse. Right. So this phone number is just, it's a really beautiful link that is already there. So we're thinking, how do we build a plumbing? Like, how do we make it kind of easy for other brands and other companies to kind of, use kind of your phone number as a digital wallet and put whatever digital thing they want?
You talk about like users, and I'm speaking from the perspective of someone in their late 40s. Mm-hmm. And you're telling me that, and you're talking about this easy onboarding. And I was just thinking yesterday. So my kids go to coding school.
Sure.
They're 6 and 8. But my daughter was explaining to me on the way home how she was going to use JavaScript in a command block in Minecraft to create a new character that did this, 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 and this. And I was like, what?
Right.
When I was 8, I was playing Atari. I was amazed at how cool Atari was. Yes. I was like,
Pong.
I remember when
Pong is amazing.
When Pitfall came out, I was like, oh my God, the graphics are unreal. How do they do this? Will anything ever be better than this? And, you know, that's the thing. I was actually doing a different recording, talking about metaverse and stuff like that. And, you know, some of that is right now, it's not as palatable as some of us. I'm not like the wearing of the headgear and a lot of that, but that's, right. You're going to have a pair of glasses and probably a contact lens.
Yep, eventually.
At some point, that would be what you would want to do. So if you're going to go, you could theoretically go to the museum, mm-hmm. and your glasses or maybe something would, I don't know, do a whole lot of different things. So it's coming, right. Folks. And you also talk about like the future users, like my 8-year-old daughter, as much mm-hmm. as I hate to admit it, won't always be 8. And those are the future consumers. But yeah, there's like, she taught herself how to use iMovie the other day and made a Startup Hustle monthly update video. And I was like, wow. But that's the thing. So like the future users of this stuff, I feel like they would maybe be like, what do you mean I can't use my phone number for this? Right. So when you look at something like this, so you go back to like iVerify, way ahead of its time. Is Redeem way ahead of its time?
Man, I think so. I mean, this feels very similar to where I was at in iVerify. Like to me, like this is so obvious. Like how come we can't just use our phone number everywhere?
I agree. I mean, when we sat down and you first told me about it, I was like, shit.
Right.
And why can't I do this?
For the first 3 or 4 months, I just spent all my time asking people, hey, who's doing this? Hey, who's doing this? And no one was doing it. It's like, this is so obvious. What am I missing? And I kept digging and kept digging, and I couldn't find anything missing. If anything, my conviction grew of like, no, this can totally work. Right. So carriers have even opened up these APIs where you can kind of say, hey, is this Matt's phone number right now on this phone? And we can leverage the same APIs they use to say, does your SIM have a plan with this network to allow you to connect? Right. So you've got this. I mean, again, they spent billions of dollars building this network, and we can now just call it as an API. There's so many cool things that have built here. So, yes, I think phone numbers are the easiest link. The other interesting thing about phone numbers that I really like, and this was a criticism of biometrics, which I agree with, is it's really hard to change your biometrics. Right. There's lots of things that in general, that's not a valid concern. But once you have a good, valid biometric template and somebody else wants to see you, it's pretty tough to change the biometric. However, you can get rid of your phone number. You can walk away.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, there is ways to take, hey, I'm changing phone numbers, and you can kind of link stuff back over. You can change the wallet, but say you want to just completely. So it makes people feel comfortable. It's like, I do have a ripcord I can pull. Right? I don't think anybody ever will. I think very few people ever will. Yeah. But it gives them this sense of it's tied to me, but it is not me. Right. So yeah, I really like just the blend of it's this great bridge between kind of the real world me and both Web 2 digital, even Web 3 digital, and metaverse kind of as we go forward. That, I just can't see a better solution. And so that's why we're doing Redeem, and we're going all in.
Speaking of solutions, if you need to find expert software developers, that doesn't have to be difficult, especially when you visit fullscale.io, where you can build a software team quickly and affordably. You can use the Fullscale platform to define your technical needs and then see what available developers, testers, and leaders are ready to join your team. Go to fullscale.io to learn more. I got wrapped up in the conversation. I get in trouble.
And you did.
I got to do three of those. So I was sitting here, I was looking, I was like, we're going to run out of time. I get in trouble, man. I just work here.
I know. Well, I'll give you your third one now. So again, unprompted by Matt, we also use Fullscale. They've been great. They're really a good extension to our team. You know, we have kind of core architect and product managers on this end, but really the ability to kind of extend kind of the local team. So Fullscale has been great.
Thanks. And that was unsolicited. I don't ever have anybody on the show because they're a client, and I think you may validate. Nor did I ask.
You did not.
Yeah, I avoided. I actually have a contract that says I don't say that publicly unless I'm given permission to. So I'd like to adhere to that. All right. So challenging things require challenging levels of fill in the blank.
So question is, it challenging things?
Challenging things. Things that are tough to do are tough to do. So if you have a challenging thing with Redeem, you got a lot of things that roll out, that is going to require challenges that are associated with,
you know, as I think
what comes to mind.
Yeah. Honestly, when you said that, the first thing that came to mind is conviction, right? Okay. So I have to have conviction and believe in my heart and my gut that this is the right approach. You know, even on the journey, we had a lot of folks say, you should do this and you should do that. And there's really smart people, even and great investors of ours. But what I've learned over time, if I execute someone else's conviction, like it's too hard. Like the emotional roller coaster, the journey, the number of no's, the number of pivots and turns you've got to be able to navigate. Like if you're simply executing someone else's conviction, you're in trouble. Right. So I think really challenging things require a deep level of initial my own conviction.
And which then, is also passion.
It's passion. Say. Yeah. Which leads to passion. Right? So I can be really excited and passionate about this idea because, you know, even again, kind of more altruistic, like even until you get to really, really kind of low socioeconomic where they can't afford even to pay their bill on their phone. Everybody has a phone.
Yeah.
They have a digital identity. They have a place in the Web3 world simply because they have their phone. That's a really cool thought of the number of benefits that we can bring to a very, very, very wide spectrum of people. Like this isn't just high-end, you know, iPhone 15, you know, holders. Like, no, anybody with the phone can manage it. So I get really passionate about that. So then the next thing for me is I've got to find team members that are also passionate about with me. So I got a great co-founder, Kenny Conklin. So Kenny was at Bats early days.
Super bright guy.
Yeah, was at Bats early days and Farm Mobile, a number of other startups, kind of co-founder, COO. Now building that engineering team, building the kind of that core, building an investor base. So we've got great even local investors. So, you know, Flyover Capital and Casey Rise are both investors with us, as well as a number of other globally have some great investors. So again, it's building the cohort of the willing to go kind of attack a vision of, hey, Web3 is really powerful, but we got to make it super easy and convenient for the consumers. And I think the phone number is the best way.
You know, one of the things that's, in my opinion, made Fullscale successful is, as you've witnessed, we take a lot of pride in trying to match people up with our clients' needs, but we try to find people that are passionate about that. Because if you're passionate about what you do, you wake up and it doesn't feel like work.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, 15 years ago, I decided that making money was going to be my hobby, and I haven't worked a single day since, man. And I really, like, if you talk to a lot of people that know me, I really do believe that because I think life's too short to do stuff that you're like, I don't know, why wake up and do something you hate every day? I mean, there's, you know, and it can be as simple as, hey, I like making money, so I can be passionate about that. And, you know, that doesn't mean that that's not a greedy statement or anything, because I also use some of the money that I earn to help other people get what they want. That's either through investment. I know you've done some of that yourself, or donations or whatever. And I don't know, there's a lot of things that, you know, you can do with that. Now, when I think about like that fill in the blank, I think passion's one. And then one of the things, so I have a feeling you may struggle with this on some days too, is patience. Because
my team would agree with you.
Yeah, well, so would mine. So like, you know, there's a challenge with that. And, but real, the founders that you would recognize and you think about that come up all have that same quality. You never have patience with yourself. There's always something we can do better, faster, something like that. But then manufacturing or creating or learning how to have enough patience with the process. As we mentioned earlier, 9 women don't make a baby in a month. And that's probably one of the most difficult things that I've had to resolve myself with when it came to entrepreneurship, especially with technology. It's a development process. It's kind of like they say with doctors, you practice medicine. You're never really like, hey, I do it, but you keep learning. I think that resources is another one. Mm-hmm. All you can do is all you can do. I think too many founders spend too much time trying to do everything themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Having the team is critical. You said something earlier that made me smile. So a number of my previous companies, so today's Thursday as we're recording this. And if something needed to be done on Tuesday, we have 2 weeks. This week and next week, right? And so I would always like, it didn't become Toby weeks or Toby days. Because I was always like, you got 2 months, come on, get this month and next month. And it's okay if today's the end of the month.
The 30th, yeah.
But no, I always was pushing the team and learning patience and learning what not to do is really hard. So this is my third startup from scratch. I've been part of 5 companies kind of over the past 20, 25 years. And I think one of the things that I've really learned is like, what is vanity chasing? What is kind of the chasing of kind of the superfluous wind that doesn't really move the business? So understanding what is core to the business, what really matters, and then make sure my time and my team's time is really just focused on those things, regardless of what the media might say or investors might say or customers might say. You really got to have that conviction of, hey, here's what it is. One of the hardest attributes I've found, both as myself as an entrepreneur and as I've invested in others, is entrepreneurs have to have strong conviction and incredible amounts of confidence and be coachable, right? And that's an odd mix of saying, I'm very, very confident this is it, but I can still listen and take feedback. The best example I found out is actually professional athletes, really good athletes. They've got to be wicked good. Like if you're going to step up at the end of the game and take that 3-point shot to win the game, you've got to have a lot of confidence. But if you can't listen to the coach and be coached, you're never going to make it very far, right? And so great entrepreneurs hold this tension of being incredibly confident as well as incredibly coachable at the same time.
And I want to expand on the coachable thing, because I think that's just starts with being open-minded, because I'm always open for input. Some of it I accept, some of them I don't, being coachable doesn't necessarily mean doing every single thing that every single person tells you.
Right. Back to how you get executed on your conviction, not someone else's.
And sometimes, well, I learned when I worked for other people that sometimes the best way to get your idea moving forward was to make it someone else's good idea, So, I mean, there's a lot of, but that goes with leadership too. You talk about the buy-in. All right. So here we are at the end of the episode. Thanks again for joining me. Go to redeem.xyz to learn more about what Toby's doing. Congratulations again. I think you're going to build another monster.
I'm planning on it.
Yeah, it's and that's going to be exciting to watch. I want to keep up with that process. And I like to end my episodes with founders with what I call the founders freestyle, where I just give my guests a chance to do. You get the mic.
I get the mic.
And I've had people sing, do poetry, like all kinds, rap. You don't have to do any of those. You might not want to do any of those, but if you want to, you can.
I will probably pass on those. You know, when I get the opportunity to kind of speak to different crowds and do things. So whenever I get an open mic, I'd like to leave kind of 2 thoughts. The first one is this identity, understand where you get your identity, because the world, especially if you're going to be an entrepreneur, is going to try to put all sorts of labels on you of what's good and what's not, and what you should be doing, what you shouldn't be doing. And like, if you don't understand where you get your identity from, your significance of self-worth, it's going to be a really, really, really hard road, right? The emotional roller coaster is very real. So understand kind of what makes you you. Right. The second point I always try to make is at the end of the day, when you ask any 70 or 80 year old, what really matters, what had value in your life, almost all of them will say people, relationships. It's not the job. It's not the money. It's not the sale of the company. It's not the promotion or the house. It's the people on the journey. And if we were to invest in relationships as consistently and as deeply as we do with our money, with our jobs, with our careers, with everything else, we would be the wealthiest people in the world with the treasure we actually care about as we get older, right? So kind of the 2 nuggets I try to leave folks when I get an open mic is really think about where you get your identity, what makes you you and valuable, and then invest in people, relationships. That is the treasure we're going to care about. So prioritize them over everything else and you'll end up winning.
Strong stuff, man. That's good. That's, It's that right there. That's why I do this show. Because there's, I don't know, I just enjoy everyone's take on how they do stuff. It's fascinating. And for my freestyle, I want to point out a couple of things from today's episode that I think that are key. You know, Toby's telling stories about being successful with things that, well, first off, when you launch them, people are saying, dude, what is this? How does anyone need this? I want to point out in my history for, and it hasn't always been tech, everything I've ever had that was good, I had a bunch of people telling me it was a shitty idea, that it was going to fail, or be like, how are you going to make any money doing that?
Right.
Right. And yeah, then I made millions. Like, I mean, this is the reality of it. And some of that was that conviction and being able to see through doubters and haters. And then also, I think, and I want to kind of compliment what you said by, you know, there are, the one thing that will tether your genius and it is guaranteed is negativity and self-doubt. Mm. And that's like a fact. That's not just my opinion. Cause as I mentioned before we recorded, I have a fascination with the traits of genius people, and that's defined a lot of different ways. And but it is a known fact that you do not ascend to where you need or want to be in your own headspace. I'm talking about you, not your organization, mm-hmm. like you as an innovator, a person, a founder, maybe even a parent, any of that. If you're, the negativity and self-doubt will tether you down. And that's one of those is internal and the other's external. So, mm-hmm. and you can either be negative, and that's you acting negatively as a form of self-doubt. Mm-hmm. You're just expressing it. Or if you don't believe it, and then you can't really have conviction if you doubt yourself.
Right.
And if you doubt yourself, people will see it. There is a lack of authenticity about that message as you send it downstream to the people that you're trying to motivate and spread your passion to.
Yeah. So, and I mean, the other thing I talk kind of in that mesh of identity is like your company is not you.
Yeah.
Your company might be a bad idea. It might not be the right idea. It might need to shift. It might need to pivot. But you as a person can be confident. You can be whole. Yeah. Like you are loved, you're known, you're beautifully made and created. And the company may fail. That doesn't mean
I have
you
to spend
are
time on some days making sure I'm detached from some of it. Cause I do a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
And what's funny is when I meet people, I'm the startup hustle guy. I'm like, that's kind of my hobby of sorts. Like I do identify startup hustle as more of a hobby.
Sure.
I mean, I'm actually the full scale guy. That's the one that's how we pay for all this. Mm. So maybe I should probably get back to doing that, man. I'm going to probably just end the show now and catch up with you down the road. I want to get an update on Redeemed soon. So well,
thank you for having me. It's been great, great, great conversation.
Thanks for coming in.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button. Then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.